Right, can I turn you to agenda 8 on page 55, which is the open spaces strategy. Oh, that's foreboding, isn't it? The tragedy here is that Chris Trail had to go, I'm afraid. She's chairing another committee, so we've had to make do with Adam Goodall and Matt Bradford.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
It's Matt Bradford speaking. If I could just introduce the item and tell you a little bit about the open spaces strategy that we've got at the moment and what our plans are to refresh it going forward. And we're happy to answer any questions that members may have. So the existing open spaces strategy that we have runs for the period from 2013 to 2028, and it was adopted by the Council in February 2013. And that really developed the work that was undertaken in an open spaces sport and recreation study in 2010. That study is part of the planning framework, and it looks at the open space contributions and how that fits with the local plan going forward, and it forms a key piece of evidence for that local plan. So as part of the study and adopted in the strategy, we assessed the availability for residents of different types of open space, different typologies of open space. We look at the open space as the typology, but we assess the quantity, the quality and the accessibility of all those different types of open space that we've got. And we do that in sub areas so that we can get a view across the borough of where there's any surplus of open space and where there's under provision, and where the quality perhaps isn't meeting residents' requirements. That feeds into the strategy, and it gives us, as a council, priorities for investment in our own open spaces. It gives us a steer on where we should be working with parishes and other local organisations to either increase the supply of open space or to improve the open space that's there, or change it from one typology to another. And it helps us to work with other organisations that may impact on open spaces, so allotment associations and other organisations there, and people that manage woodlands that have public access. From the strategy, our investment plan and an action plan that's contained within the report, and we've made significant progress against the action plan that you'll see, and that's one element of the strategy. But what it also does is it sets these standards, and it informs us of what we should be asking for in terms of open space when we get new applications for new developments. So these standards, in terms of quantity, quality and accessibility, will liaise with the planning department when we get an when they receive a planning application. We'll look at the number of dwellings, the anticipated number of residents, and we'll say, on this particular development, you need these typologies, this is where they should be, and that forms part of the 106 agreement that then gets delivered down the track, hopefully, by the developer. Those existing typologies, the quality, quantity, accessibility and quality standards can be found on page 87. So it just gives you a little flavour of what we do there. Mm-hmm. So towards the back of the report, starting on page 115, you have the existing delivery plan there. It goes through, and we've colour-coded the plan, red, amber, green, to show which actions have been completed, which are in progress, and which haven't progressed to date. So I think that's it on the existing strategy. Where we're at the moment with refreshing this is we've actually had a new open spaces study produced. So we have a new baseline of open spaces within the district that again looked at those three elements of each typology, the quantity, quality and accessibility. That study's been completed. Parish councils and local residents were consulted as part of that process. and my team now are working on refreshing the strategy to reflect the new evidence base that we've got, to rework the priorities, and we're looking to take that to Cabinet this December. So that new strategy is in development at the moment.
Okay, thank you very much. Councillor Shepherd.
Thank you. Can I refer to page 87 onwards, table 3? This first like a question to check my understanding of this. I see reference to adoption standard in the far right hand column. Does that mean, in the case of a new development, the provision will be of a standard which will enable the Borough Council to adopt it and maintain it in perpetuity? Is that correct?
That's correct. It's written here as an adoption standard. The inference there is that is the standard that we would like it to be at if we choose to adopt it.
Right.
Now, currently, there are some open spaces within the district that aren't adopted by the Borough Council, yeah. So the developer could choose to maintain the open space through a management company or some other vehicle and charge a service charge to residents.
Yeah.
And these would be the standards that we'd expect to be written into the Section 106 agreement for that management company to adhere to make sure that reaches the appropriate quality. So that wording might be a little bit misleading now, and in the new strategy we'd probably reword that to reflect that change in the way that our public open spaces are managed at the moment.
Can I just pursue that point?
Yes, please.
You said that the borough might choose to adopt it, so I'm not really quite clear what element of choice or compulsion or is on the borough to adopt, and nor am I quite clear why a developer might choose to a management company and charge a fee to residents rather than requiring the borough to adopt it.
Okay. There is no compulsion on developers to transfer open spaces to the Borough Council.
Right.
If they wish to do so, the Borough Council asks for something called a commuted sum, which is the equivalent of 20 years maintenance on that open space. So the developer pays the Borough Council to maintain that open space for 20 years, and after that period the onus falls on the taxpayer, effectively, on revenue budgets.
On the onus falls on the whom, sorry?
On the taxpayer.
On the taxpayer, yes.
To maintain that, but we do ask for 20 years of commuted sum to maintain that. Some developers are quite reluctant to pay that maintenance sum to us and instead prefer to transfer their land holdings into a management company, and the revenue for maintaining that open space is generated through levying a service charge on residents. And this situation is becoming more and more common as time goes on.
May I just ask one more question?
Yeah.
Get this clear in my head, if I may. Thank you. So if I understand you correctly, there's obviously a benefit for the developer because he needn't pay this commuted sum, but could instead impose a charge upon residents in the new houses to maintain the land. And I'm aware of examples, other people maybe too, where this has come as rather a shock to some residents. I mean, you might say they should have known from what they signed up to, but having said that, it's come as a shock to some people, I know that. And there's clearly an advantage to the Borough Council in that the Borough Council is relieved of the burden opposed to the taxpayer in 20 years' time and all that. But I'm not very comfortable about this because I'm aware of the concern it has caused to residents and new developments. So I want just to put forward the idea, if I may, and see what people think about it. Perhaps as a Borough Council, we might want to shift our stance a little bit and be saying to developers, actually, developer, we are going to exercise our right to adopt this land.
Come on.
I'm going to require this sum of money from you. Okay, 20 years' time, burden on the taxpayer, I appreciate that. But I can see that issue, but frankly, I think it might be the better option of not at the moment, whereby people are being faced with quite hefty service charges for pieces of land.
Absolutely. And
not always necessarily getting the service they are being asked to pay for. I have to think in very general terms.
Matt, would you like to come back?
Yeah, Certainly. We can't compel developers to transfer land to us, unfortunately. Okay. We insist that they pay the commuted sum. For us, it probably would be easier if all of the open space was managed consistently by one body, but unfortunately that isn't the case. So we do have this picture where you get different management companies and different organisations managing open space throughout the district, and as I say, that is becoming more prevalent as time goes on. I absolutely understand the point that Councillor Shepherd has made, and I have had correspondence from residents that do pay council tax and a service charge, and they do feel that isn't equitable, to be quite honest. So it is a bit of a tricky situation, but it is one that we find ourselves in at the moment, and I don't think there's an easy solution to that.
Would it require the government to legislate, to change that?
Yes. Possibly, yes, yeah. Whether that's something that they would consider doing, I'm not sure really. It creates an additional burden on district and borough council. So
yes,
whether that's something that they would be interested in legislating for or not, I'm not quite sure.
Well, I can see the issue, madam. I just offer the thought: do we as a group wish or not wish to draw the attention of our cabinet colleagues to this issue? And ask them to consider whether they do or don't want to approach MPs and the government about it.
I would second that.
Yeah. I think it's a huge issue, and I think it can get messy, knowing who's responsible for what. Is that something that we could do, Michael?
We can. It's something that can be clearly recorded in the minutes this evening, and we can refer the minutes. Obviously, cabinet members will read these minutes from this evening. But
it's a question of minutes, or is it a question of actually being a bit more, is it more formal, actually saying, passing some motion or whatever to say that we ask the cabinet to consider this?
Michael.
I think you've probably got two options. I think Matt Bradford said that there would be a report perhaps going to Cabinet in December. Mm-hmm. So one thing you could do is tie your timetable, your information going to Cabinet at that time, or you could do it as a standalone report, which would go via SMB to Cabinet as quickly as that would happen. So I think that's, if you wanted to make a recommendation to Cabinet, those would be your two options: do it as a standalone thing, or tie it to the update report going to Cabinet in December.
I think a standalone.
Yes, I'd second that.
For SMB, to go to SMB and then to Cabinet.
Yeah.
Do it that way.
I mean, they're all right.
Sorry, through the chair. Councillor Harris.
We'll
come back to that.
One of my questions has largely been answered, but I'd like to just follow on from what we've just been saying, that it's not just an initial fee that the new house buyers have to pay. Quite often, I've seen examples of considerable hikes fairly shortly down the line. So they end up with, I'm sure the developers don't make a fanfare of the fact that they can put it up when they feel like it, and that people end up with huge, huge fees and find it difficult to sell their house in that case. And really, I think prospective buyers ought to be fully informed of that situation, but I don't really see what SMB or Cabinet or whatever can do about it if there's no obligation on the developer to allow the council to adopt it. If they consider that their management company can make some money out of it, that's what they're going to do, isn't it? But
My suggestion was to lobby the government about it.
Just for clarity, the land managing organisation or service agent that looks after these things, they're not allowed to make a profit, so they have to do it at cost. It's a non-profit making organisation. That said, some of the overheads that are attached to these charges can be quite expensive, but they're not allowed to make a profit. It has to be done at cost.
Okay, Councillor Tassel. I had
another question. The report was done by consultants, and I was just wondering how much that cost, because I know it might be a bit more piecemeal, and I know there's technical matters than expertise required. I just wondered, because you were consulting parish councils anyway and the public, could not a bigger part of that process have been done by parish councils and councillors who know their areas and know the state of the open spaces in their wards, and or officers and members of the public who know their area as well? Could not more of the report have come from that and saved money when we've got four rangers running around like headless chickens trying to cope with the open spaces we've got already, and could do with some funding? And we've spent a lot of money on consultants again.
Just to say, the existing strategy was based on an evidence base that was put together in 2010. Mm-hmm. That work was part of a wider study that looked at playing pitches, open spaces and built facilities as well. I don't have those costs with me tonight. The new evidence base that we've got was also commissioned by consultants. It is quite a technical and specialist area, and it takes many, many hours of work. So I would say that it wouldn't have been possible to do this work internally, utilising the rangers or any other service that we've got, because the people that do it need a specific planning background as well. So I think the use of consultants to get the new evidence base is justified. They visit every site, and do detailed quality assessments. So there is a lot of work there. Consultation with parishes is undertaken. So the consultants have certainly attempted to consult with every parish on a number of occasions, and have had a good return rate there. And they also ran a public consultation where residents were invited to put their views forward individually. So there's a lot of work, and my view is that work, it is justified coming out to consultants. And another element to that is that the assessment has a degree of independence that perhaps it wouldn't have if we did it internally.
Thank you.
Just to say that we will be developing the strategy in-house. We could have commissioned the strategy work as part of this as well, so the consultants do the evidence base and the strategy. We've chosen to develop the strategy internally because we do feel we have those skills and expertise within the team, and that our local knowledge is better than the consultants that may not have the background and have worked in the area for some time. So we've got the geographical knowledge that perhaps they haven't.
Thank you.
Councillor Tassel.
I'd like to go to the bottom item on page 87, which is the provision for children and young people. Of course, I personally don't know what all these references mean, but one of the things that it does say is that it will be dog free. Does the policy that we're looking at actually state that before they're adopted by the council, does it state that they should be fenced round before they're actually accepted? It gives everything but that. Do you insist, where possible, a play area can be fenced round?
If I can, Chair, we do insist that the children's play areas are fenced, and they have a self-closing gate to prevent access by dogs, obviously. Children's play areas normally form part of a wider open space, so dogs are free to use the areas outside of the children's play area, but our standard is to have them all fenced.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Payne.
Thank you again, Chair. Councillor Payne. I'd just like to reiterate on what Councillor Shepherd has actually said, and I would actually welcome the comments that have been made with reference to the management fees being put to Cabinet, because I have knowledge of a couple of areas within a ward where it's becoming extremely distasteful by the residents whilst experiencing high levels of vandalism, and unfortunately these residents are actually having to pay for this in addition to the service charges, and I find it a little hard to believe that a potential developer has got the option to say no, I'll maintain it myself, I won't make any profit, etc. And I find that a little bit, and I would actually welcome that to be put before Cabinet, and again Chair, if that could be admitted. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hunt.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm feeling my way a bit with this question, so bear with me.
Okay.
The urban spaces in this borough are fantastic in many, many cases. Queen's Park, in particular in Loughborough, is absolutely exemplary, as is obviously the Outwoods. But, you know, people specifically come to go to that park. I wanted to look a bit more at the areas outside of Loughborough. And page 92 lists the summary of shortfalls in larger settlements and service centres. And it does mention one, which I would like to name, if that's okay, which is Mount Sorrel. And in particular, I'm thinking of the Loughborough Road play area in Mount Sorrel. Now, you referred in your introduction about working with parish councils. It's parish council land, it's their park. But at the moment, because the equipment was, I believe, damaged, they've removed it. It's literally sawn down to the ground. So it's just, I would say it's a field, but it's a bit more rough than that at the moment, with a few patches of what was underneath the play area. And I wondered if there's anything that this council can do to assist parish councils in general, but I am specifically thinking about that with my, just personally, to assist parish councils to create better open spaces, because actually there's no other open space around there. There's no opportunity for additional open space. That is it. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that this council can do to assist?
We can do things to assist. We can provide them with help and advice and signpost them to external funding opportunities that may enable them to replace that particular play area. I'm not familiar with that one, unfortunately. But
it's a small one, admittedly.
Yeah, we're happy to provide advice and guidance and work with people to do that. Unfortunately, in that particular instance, the play area would be unlikely to get replaced with Section 106 funding, because it wouldn't be still compliant to ask for funding to replace something that was removed due to vandalism, because that's a pre-existing need.
It may not have been vandalism, by the way. It may have been age. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's just help and advice, really, and signposting towards funding, unfortunately. We'd love to help out with funding and make sure that sort of non-borough council-owned assets were brought up to standard. But that's obviously very difficult in the financial climate where we sort of focus the resources that we have on maintaining facilities on our own land. So I don't know. I think that's quite a tricky one, really.
Okay.
But we're quite happy to have a conversation with them down at Mount Sorrel Parish Council to see if we can help in any way.
Lovely. Mm. Thank you very much.
Mm. Thank you.
This is, if I could wrap this up now, we've got no other speakers. This is an enormous piece of work. The information is very very diverse as well, and in some places contradictory. and I had to this morning go back and forth and back. I don't think I would have coped with it at all, completely online. I wouldn't have coped with it because I'd have had to have gone back all the while. You've got priority areas to go at now. Is that the is that this bit at the back with the red and the green?
Yes, that's the action plan.
So can you just tell me what the red is? What does that signify? Something that you've done or not
done?
The
red are things that we haven't done.
Yeah.
Amber is things that are in progress, and green is it's another ongoing task that is happening, or it's something that's been completed.
Right. I can't find any amber.
There are some in there.
Five.
Oh, right, yeah. In other words, then, I couldn't find many red, because the red that I was looking at was really amber.
There aren't many red ones.
No, I found a red one there.
On
I thought there was a lot of red ones, and I was going. That's what I was going to pick out, thinking, oh God, there's an awful lot of red. But the red is amber. So I'll let you off on that then. So I think it's a wonderful plan. There is one thing that I don't particularly like about it, and that is the table at the front, which tells me progress towards targets within Loughborough. Are there not progress towards targets that aren't in Loughborough anywhere?
Where do you live?
It doesn't matter. All our land is parish council land.
Yes.
The reason that table focuses on Loughborough is that the majority of the council's landholdings, parks and open spaces are within the town and not out amongst the parishes and villages. So the projects that within our control, we can apply for borough council funding through our capital programme, and we can get those moving and get things done. It's a little bit more difficult outside of Loughborough because the land isn't ours. The parish council might have different priorities to the open spaces. They might have different needs, and it's just generally more difficult. So it's not to say that open spaces outside of Loughborough aren't important, but these are the ones that are our assets.
Yeah.
We have a direct responsibility for maintaining and improving them, and that's what we've done in line with the strategy.
Okay. And there was one last question. I don't know if it's there, but it's gone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. Yes.
I'll just say in terms
hello.
Of, hello, sorry. I'll just say in terms of rewriting the action plan was a 5-year period which come to the end of. We will look at rewriting and making it a bit easier to read, because certainly as officers, you know, coming in and picking it up, it's very difficult to get your head around. And I think it could be made a lot easier, certainly for people to read and to action the recommendations.
I think you're right on that. That there's so many paragraphs. There's so many that's not necessarily contradict, but cross over from each other. And you think I've just read that somewhere else, and it's further down there. So, as I say, a huge amount of work here, and I'm sure it's all very necessary. But yes, if you could simplify it for us, it would be very good. Councillor Pardon.
Yeah, Chair, just to politely remind you, I have my hand up anyone to ask a point. Do I still have that motion?
You do. Go on.
Right. Two questions. Just going to page 142, where it talks about the Grange Park playing field. It says, project underway, continue liaison. 2015, obviously 3 years later, are we talking here about the exact piece of land where the cemetery's work was proposed for?
That is that piece of land, yes.
Right, so, I mean, obviously it says here, the liaison required with Allendale Road, the proposed contribution of facilities for young people are appropriate and achieve maximum quality potential. So I would just politely ask that that was borne in mind in the deliberations now that the cemetery consultation's closed, please. And the other thing is, if I can just go to page 108 and 109, I do actually have a contradiction, which you alluded to a few. We talk about trees and hedgerows. It says, objective, to ensure that the council's tree stock is maintained in a safe and healthy condition and minimise associated health and safety risk. Now, obviously, we think of health and safety risk with trees, i.e., you know, like very bad storms and branches coming down and landing on people and killing them, which is sadly seems to always happen every time there's a bad storm. Happened the other week, not in Charlton. But then we read on page 109D, says the council will not prune its tree stock to alleviate the obstruction of light or telecommunication signals or where branches overhang neighbouring properties. Now, for example, round the corner on Victoria Street, we have an area with a high crime rate and deprivation and ASB, but the council were unwilling to remove any of the part of the tree near the light, despite the fact that this lamp was the entrance to the estate and it was darkened. So I'm struggling to see how that is minimising associated health and safety risks. So there are things, you know, we can all think of areas in our wards, but I found that quite...
Would you like to respond to that?
Yeah.
That?
Yeah. If I could come back to the first point on Grange Park, Plainfield, that first chair. It was proposed last year that this site be used as a cemetery. The proposal was to use part of the site for play facilities, so it would have been a multifunctional site, and we do have contributions for Section 106 money to do that. Obviously, we've gone out to consultation on that issue again. We're considering our options, and that's being considered at Cabinet in October. Just an update there. With regard to trees and hedgerows, since the strategy was written, the council actually recognised that some of its tree stock was causing a problem for residents that didn't represent health and safety risks. So light obstruction and blocking satellite signals and all sorts of issues, and we were able to secure extra funding called quality of life funding. So if our tree stump was causing quality of life issues, that funding was made available for us to do tree work, and we have been doing that, and we prioritise cases as they come in on an individual basis. So That was brought in after the strategy was written. There was an amendment there. So we do that. We do that now. With trees in urban areas, there are a number of factors that we have to take into account. We do have quality of life issues and health and safety risks, but some trees in towns and villages have trees of preservation orders, so sometimes we have to apply for planning permission to do work and other things. So It is quite complicated, and I think the trees that Councillor Parton is talking about on Victoria Street, if I'm not mistaken, are part of the HRA tree stock, so it's housing land, I understand, rather than open spaces. So that would be funded from housing budgets, and we'd need to liaise with them to get that.
Would you be the person to liaise?
We have liaised, and I think a site visit was made from, not mistaken, Councillor Paul.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, this ties into my last question. This strategy is specifically for our open spaces, but not for council housing stock land.
No, this strategy is for all open spaces. And it sets out how we'll manage our open spaces, but with that being housing land, that's not managed by my team and my budgets. The housing people have their own budgets for their own housing area and housing estates that they manage those small open spaces with that. So it might be where there is a block of flats, you've got some communal green areas that would be managed through housing budgets and not really.
Would it still be called a quality of life issue?
That wouldn't be funded from.
No, I know it's not funded from you.
Yes, it
but
would
we still
would
approach
it?
Up. I know it's a different pocket, so you need to get a different pocket.
Yeah. So last question then. Do the landlord services still adhere to this policy for management of their green spaces?
They should do. I mean, this
is for them as well.
This policy primarily looks at the typologies that we've set out in the table. So what you've got on page 87 is the different typologies that we've got.
Yeah.
So parks, natural open space, children's play areas.
Yeah.
A lot of the housing sites have incidental open space, which is quite small. It's surrounded, it's communal around blocks of flats or houses. So it doesn't naturally fit into any one of these particular typology. So it's quite difficult to see where it fits in. But they are open spaces, and they should fit in with how this is being managed.
Mm, and they're also important, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we've recently delivered a scheme at the Bell Foundry on housing land, which has improved that area quite substantially.
Yes. Okay. Richard Shepherd, Councillor Shepherd.
Thank you. May I follow up Councillor Parton's point, and then if I may, before we close, I'd like to be clear in my head what action we're taking regarding page 109D, Councillor Parton raised an issue, and this may sound small, but it's a serious point. I think anybody's entitled, I believe, to cut down some of the hanging in their garden and hand it back to their neighbour. In all seriousness, is somebody entitled to cut down council branches overhanging their gardens and hand them back to the council at no cost? I mean, can that be arranged?
It could be arranged, and I think your interpretation of the law is correct. People can prune trees back to the edge of their boundary. The one exception to that, I would urge caution, is where there's a tree preservation order in place.
Yeah, it's a small point, but still.
And they would need the necessary permissions to undertake that work from the planning department.
So is there a top tree line people can phone up with HRA or council?
If they email cleanergreenwood@charnwood.gov.uk with any requests, I'm sure we can look at that.
And you will also lay the HRA comfortably about.
Yes, absolutely.
Great stuff. Great. Thank you. Thank you for raising that, too. And then finally, if I may, before we propose, can we just clarify the action we're, as a group, taking about this issue of developers and their land that we disowns?
Michael. So I think the your wish is to make a report to the Cabinet, which will need to go via the Scrutiny Management Board, and that is to ask the Cabinet to lobby local MPs and government to look at the issue of the ability that developers currently have to choose not to offer land to the council for adoption, and instead to ensure that that open space land is maintained through other routes. And the concern that you have is that the vehicle that they use through management companies, notwithstanding the fact that they are set up not to make a profit, can lead to local residents having quite significant bills. And I think there's a separate concern about the ways in which those bills can go up being somewhat less than transparent.
I think also the quality of discharging of the work in some cases, I would suggest.
I mean, you've also got to think about the people that have fallen on harder times and on benefits, and they don't have to pay the council tax. As much percentage of council tax, is that the same with this community charge? Well, it's not, because it's nothing to do with the council. So they still can be running up an awful bill where other residents are having to subsidise probably their payment as well. If it's non-profit making, obviously it's running on not a shoestring, but it's running within its capability. So if you have three or four residents on a on a housing estate that hasn't got, can't pay into that fund, then other residents have got to pay and take up the slack, haven't they? Mm. So it will be going on more. Mm. Matt, did you want to come back?
I should point out that on some occasions these service charges, they do cover maintenance of open spaces, but they cover other things as well, such as communal parking, unadopted roads, lighting, that sort of thing. So it's one piece of a service charge that could be for a wider suite of services that management company is providing.
Can you foresee a problem on this at all?
Can I foresee a problem? Mm. I can see why some residents would be unhappy with receiving a service charge.
And having to pay for it as well through council tax. Councillor Tassel.
We had this problem in Shepshed where a developer offered us some land to look after, but they also offered us quite a large sum of S106 money, so that the residents didn't have to pay anything because the whole area was going to be looked after with S106 money. So would it be possible that when you're looking at this, you check that there is any S106 money available to the community, you know, that they could use it for maintaining the open spaces?
Yes, certainly, Councillor Tassel. The commuted sum that I talked about earlier for 20 years maintenance, that is part of the 106 agreement. Right. So that's the maintenance sum, if you like. So again, it's quite often that the developer does not want to pay that commuted sum.
Because that has to be paid up in front,
a certain trigger point within the agreed Section 106 agreement. Right. Yeah.
So it is a big ask, isn't it? Asking the developers to pay that commuted sum.
It can be quite substantial sums.
Straight away, instead of, say, every 5 years, give a small part.
I think it's done that the payment's received at a certain trigger point, and it's usually at the point of the land transfer that payment is made. You know, there are instances where developers build estates and they go out of business. So we would need to receive that up front, really. Yeah, it's probably the only safe way of doing it, to make sure we receive the funds.
I did see another hand going up, I think.
That was me scratching my head.
Don't. Right, are you satisfied with the wording that Michael read out? That it will go to SNB and then as a recommendation to go to Cabinet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you
very much. Thank you very much, Adam. I've now put a face to a name, or a name to a face. Because when I wrote your name down, I thought, who the heck is Thank you very much. So you're quite welcome to stay.
I'm not too.
I'm coming as well. Okay. Right. If I could just take your attention to item 9, page 143, please, and it's the progress of the paddle work.
Okay. So paddle work. We've had a 5-year housing land supply panel. It's met on those dates. It's now completed the evidence gathering stage. Our last meeting we had was on the 5th of September with the planning service, and we have another meeting scheduled for the 3rd of October, and where there'll be the panel will be looking at the draft recommendations, which will be referred to SNB on the 30th of October. So that's ongoing, and obviously Councillor Seaton, you're the chairman of that group. Would you like to add anything about that panel?
No.
Good. The other thing I'll highlight as well is in terms of panel work, there's possibly, I've been working with Councillor Parsons on a scoping document for the impact of a waste incinerator site on the M1 motorway, near the junction with Loughborough. So there is a potential for another panel. Obviously, we'll go to SNB on the 30th of October as well, reviewing and considering if a panel should be set up.
Well, I'm the borough representative on that liaison committee for BIFOP.
Okay.
I've been on it now since it was going to be a landfill site, but I was on it as a representative of Shepshed Town Council,
mm-hmm.
Which goes back to 20... God, I can't remember.
Well, if the scope 18
years, but I've been back, I've been on it, and then I was put on it as a Charnwood Borough representative. So if there was a panel set up, then I would very much like to be on it.
You'd be interested, yeah. Obviously, the final decision lies with SNB, but that scoping document is listed to go to that meeting. And that's it on the panel work.
But of course, it's through you, Madam. It has been passed. It was Leicestershire County Council.
Mm-hmm.
It went to appeal. There's been a recent application 2 years ago to change it from a two-stack to a single-stack larger mm-hmm. burner. Of course, that was passed because the original one had been passed by at appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's happened since then on the thing apart from they've put an island in on the road into the inside mm-hmm. the building, but they say they've started, so...
Excuse me.
And the panel would be looking, if it was set up, would be looking at the impact on local mm-hmm. residents, and it's the health and well-being of residents if and when it does.
Well, yes, it's the emissions that yeah. we need to look at, and the particulates and mm-hmm. everything like that. So yes, I would like to be on that if
thank
it was possible.
You. Noted that. Thank you.
And as the 5-year panel comes to a conclusion, and it's not yet established whether that one will make a panel. I'll just say that panels over the years have done an awful lot of work scrutinising, looking into forming policies and better ways of working, smarter ways of working. So if anybody's got an idea for a panel, mm-hmm. Please come forward and it will be presented at the SNB for their decision.
Come forward to whom? To you, Karen, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah. The process is to come and you've got an idea and we can scope it out to see if there's any merit in it going forward and that we complete the scoping document together. We may need to get experts in from, say, if it was a housing issue, one of the head of housing coming in, and then we would take it to SNB for final review. And
okay, lovely, thank you.
Okay, now to our work programme. Michael's got his on.
Oh, hang on.
Just to draw people's attention to the supplementary report, which you should all have a copy of, which is the updated version of the forward plan of key decisions, which was published after your agenda. So thought it was best to give you the most up-to-date version, even though it came as a late report.
Okay, so work programme item, there's three things to highlight, one of which is Michael has highlighted already, the key decisions list. Is there anything on there that would be you'd wish to see put forward into the work programme for this group? I've had a look through and one thing that did take my interest, but I don't have enough information, was on page number actually. It's one, there it is, page 3, 4, page 6. On the second item down, there's a local development scheme which is scheduled to go to Cabinet in March, and I wondered if that was a possibility. No. I don't know, there is a little bit of, I don't know enough detail about that, so that could be a possibility, but
yeah.
Michael might want to come in on that.
Yeah.
If I may, Chair, the local development scheme is the project plan for developing the council's local plan and other planning policy documents. So in and of itself, it's not a policy. You have used that document to schedule timing of your scrutiny of emerging planning policy documents, and obviously you're in the middle of scrutinising the emerging new local plan, and I think the suggestion would be we continue to keep you updated on that timetable at the same time as we give you the other programme of policies and strategies, which you usually get in April, so that should be quite timely as that usually goes March, April time to Cabinet.
I've just had a look at you've got the discretionary houses in what we call occupation licensing scheme options. Yes. That's going to Cabinet in December as a report to consider the introduction of discretionary, blah, 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 blah. Can't say that. Discretionary. That's it. What about that, Michael?
So, in the your work programme report, page 147, the last paragraph in the background section refers to the fact that you have three items to be scheduled.
Yeah.
We forget about the tenancy strategy and policy, which is still awaiting government decisions before that can be updated. But you do have two items in relation to HMOs. Mm-hmm. At the time of writing the report, there was no further update, but as you can see from the...
So that can go on in November?
I think you can either schedule it now or... subject to further consultation with the relevant head of service, the chair and vice chair could schedule it anyway. I think there's a wish for the head of service from the head of service for you to have a look at it. So,
so what we'll do is
we'd like to bury it then. Never ever find those three letters together again.
So that was. Is there anything else that any members have seen in the forward plan document that they?
No, but I have one question. Several items are against the name of Claire Hodgson. I believe Claire is leaving. Is there a new postholder named it or not?
I believe the interviews are taking place this week.
Imminent.
So we await the outcome from those interviews. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Nothing else in there. So that was the panel of items. Following discussion with the chairman and vice chairman, the development of the local plan should be rescheduled from the group's meeting on the 25th of September to the meeting on the 5th of February. So that's to note that revised change there. And the other item is also to make it a manageable number of items for the meeting. It's suggested that the tenancy support policy be rescheduled from the group's meeting on the 5th of February to the 13th of November meeting, and the head of landlord services was consulted on that proposed change, so it's to note that as well.
How many have we got on February then? I thought it's only two now, is it?
Let's have a look. So for February, we November.
And
we've just added
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. No, that's fine. I just realised that the November one was ridiculously light, as in one. Mm-hmm. But now we've added that other one, which I think would be generate quite a lot of discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Any other changes or anything I need to update? No. As this goes through to SNB for final endorsement. So. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, everybody.
Brilliant timing.
Okay. What's up? Thank you for all your contributions.